So here we are, Parshas Vayechi, at the end of the book of Genesis, and it opens Vayechi Yaakov. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt for 17 years, and just the way we understand Yaakov's, those last 17 years of his life, they were really the only good years of his life. He was reunited with Yosef, and he had all his children and his grandchildren and great-grandchildren around him. And it's been noted that there's no space in the Torah between the end of last week's parsha of Vayigash, which ended with the words "Ubnei Yisro vayifru vayirbu ma'oid," and they increased and they multiplied very much. And then Vayechi Yaakov, and Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt. So many reasons are given. The Zohar Kodesh says, when we were kids, when we would learn with Chumash Rashi, and Rashi would always say, because Yaakov Avinu dies in this week's parsha, so nistemo einehem shel Yisrael, so our eyes are somehow closed. He was our eyes, and so there's this lack of vision. You know, in order to see what's happening to yourself, you have to be able to get out of the panic, and you have to be able to get out of the immediate moment and look around you and see, you know, what you have, what you don't have, and get yourself in some kind of a context, you know. And that's how we deal with our lives. We put ourselves into a narrative. And, you know, we, in the context of a narrative, we interpret what's happening to us. And with the death of Yaakov, we lost that ability permanently. And so Nistamo Einehem, that, you know, we, with the death of Yaakov, it's like we don't know what to do next, and so we go down and down and down into exile and so forth. So that's the remez, that's the hint at the beginning of this week's parsha. We don't get a little space, a breathing space. The Zohar Kodesh comes at it from a different angle. He says, "Vayirbu, vayifru, vayirbu mo'oid." And they multiplied and increased greatly. And Yaakov lived in Egypt. We know that Yaakov Avinu was the holiest of the holy, right? So Yaakov Avinu's face is carved on the throne of glory, so to speak. Yaakov is the face of God. Yaakov is in Mitzrayim, and he tastes Olam Haba, he tastes the world to come. And that's why it doesn't say Vayechi Yisroel. Yaakov, he's Yaakov, even though, you know, when Yaakov is in a high madriga, when Yaakov feels, you know, connected to the divine, he becomes Yisrael, and he's only in Yaakov when he is cotton, when he's small. And as the Zohar Kodesh says, and what happens when he's about to die, he says, "Vayikrivu yimei Yisrael." Lomas, and the days of Israel come to this. It should be just the opposite way around. The Torah should say, "Vayichi Yang, Ivachi Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim," and Israel lived in Mitzrayim 17 years, because that's Mamash Olam Haba, is world to come. And then "Vayikrivu Yemei Yaakov Lomas." I mean, what could be smaller or more diminishing than death? So the thing is that Yaakov is so special, that in some respects, Yaakov is even higher than Yisrael. One of the things that happened to us Jews is, as soon as we got down to Egypt, we had one mitzvah, you know, which was the mitzvah of Bris Milah, of circumcision. We stopped. And the Medrash says, we were mevatel this mitzvah, other than the tribe of Levi, everybody else, we just wanted to be more Egyptian than the Egyptians, because Yosef had arranged for all the Egyptians to circumcise themselves, and we stopped circumcising ourselves. 600,000 Yidden came out of Egypt, were all freshly circumcised on Erev Pesach, that first Pesach in Egypt, the night, the day of Makas Bechoris, the slaying of the firstborn. We had to have done the Bris Milah circumcision in order to eat from the Korban Pesach, but the 200 years that we were in Egypt, we didn't circumcise. So that's the meaning of this verse, Vayifru Vayirbu Ma'oid. And we spread out. You know, the whole thing about Egypt. What does it mean to go down to Egypt? You know, Egypt is the dark side of the Yud, of the Kutzoy Shel Yud. You know, in the name of God, which is written Yud Hei Vavei. The Yud represents Chachma, and the Hei represents Bina. The Vav represents all the other Sephiris, and then the Hei on the end is As Malchus, the Shechinah. The sphere of Keser is pointed to by the spitz, the little head, the point, the sharp point on the top of the Yud, which decreases into infinity, as we were learning in Sefer Yetzirah. And if you think about what that means, it's that it's there, it's not there. There's a place where the world connects to the divine, or where the world connects to the world which isn't, doesn't need to be made of matter and form, to the world which is, in a sense, you know, when I say the divine, I mean that everything that it comes into existence has come from somewhere. So that sphere of Keser is the bridge between that world. And so the point of the Yud refers to that place where the physical, material world is really connected still, is emanating from it. Like, it's hard to describe something that isn't. Mitzrayim, Egypt, is the flip side of that. It's the dark side of that. It's the negative. In Egypt, you know, the people in Egypt didn't have any sense of a personal connection to the divine. In Egypt, people were brought up to believe that a god is these things that they could see, that they could talk about, they could worship, they could, you know, their literature and their poetry, and there's a lot, right? In Egypt, they were crazy about gods. Gods who, here in the world, I mean, you could see everything in Egypt was this larger-than-life picture of a god, whether it was a sun or a dog or whatever it was. The sense of inside itself, of having a dialogue, the way we do constantly, when we're talking and praying and meditating, that wasn't happening in Egypt. So we go down to Egypt, and immediately we start acting like Egyptians. The first thing that we do is we stop circumcision, the one mitzvah that we had, really. And yet, the Zohar Kodesh says, don't make a mistake and think that there was any disconnect between us and Yaakov. And so the last week's parasha ends, Vayifru Vayirbu Ma'od, and they increased and multiplied greatly, Vayichi Yaakov, and Yaakov lived. It could have just as easily have said, Vayihi Yaakov. And Yaakov was in Egypt 17 years. Why does it have to say Vayihi Yaakov? Yaakov lived in Egypt. because it's the only life that he really had. We know that as soon as he discovered that Yosef was alive, was really alive, it says, Vatechi Ruach Yaakov, that Yaakov's spirit comes alive. And immediately God speaks to him. So, when we went down to Egypt and we began to spread out, we were not becoming Egyptian. Because there's Elohim, there is God, and there is Elohim Acherim, other gods. And just depends if what you're doing is holy or unholy, whether you are worshipping Elohim or whether you are into Elohim Acherim, other gods. The word is the same. The kavana is different. So Yaakov says to his son Yosef, he says to him, please, Alno, he says, Vasisa imodi chesed ve'emes, do with me chesed, kindness, emes, and a truth. Alno sibbereni b'mitzrayim, please don't bury me in Egypt. And because we multiply and because we spread out, Mo'od, meaning with all our energies, Yaakov has to beg, please don't bury me in Egypt. We are Yaakov, right? Every thought that Yaakov had in his life produces one of us. From his first thoughts as a child until his last thoughts as a man, as a father and a grandfather, and as a husband, and as a man of God, and as a... every thought that Yaakov has produces a yid. We are called Adas Yaakov, the congregation of Yaakov. See, when it comes to Avraham, we are called Bnei Avraham, the children of Avraham. When it comes to Yitzchak, we are called Zera Yitzchak, the seed of Yitzchak. When it comes to Yaakov, we're Adas Yaakov. We are the congregation. We are, we are Yaakov. Yaakov says, please, I'm asking you, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. You have to be in Mitzrayim. We have to be in Mitzrayim, folk. We have to be in Golis. We have to be in exile. And how come he doesn't ask Yehuda? Since Yehuda is the chief, he's the king, he's the one who gets things done. He's the one, when Yaakov didn't trust any of his children to take Binyamin to Egypt, he trusted Yehuda. He trusted Yehuda to take him and to bring him back. How come he didn't say to Yehuda, Al nosik b'neinim in Mitzrayim, please don't bury me in Egypt? He says to Yosef Dafka. And then Yosef said, yeah, I'll do what you say. Immediately Yaakov says, Hishov ali, swear. Vayishov aloi. And so Yosef has to swear. His word is not good enough. I mean, and before he even asks of him this favor to not bury him in Egypt, he says, Im no matzosi chen beinecha, if I find favor in your eyes, like a father has to say to his child, Im no matzosi chen beinecha, please, if you like me. And he can't just say to him, look, Yossel, I need a favor. Do as I say. He has to beg. So, you know, Yosef is always awake. There's something inside us called Yosef. He's always awake. Because Yosef went down to Egypt. He went into exile before we went into exile. And he went through 6,000 years of exile. And he fixed it all. And he fixed it all by staying awake. Meaning, he never lost his awareness. You know, Yehuda also has a part of him which is always awake, as we've been talking about these last weeks, that there's something inside Yehuda that never gives up, and it doesn't matter how far down he goes, it's always there and says, don't worry, it's not too late. How come Yaakov doesn't ask Yehuda to take him up? Because Yehuda always goes into the darkness before he comes into the light. And Yaakov says, please, I don't even want to go there. It's true. If Yosef fails to keep my kinderlach awake and they go down, Yehuda can wake them up. No question about it. But please, let's not even go there where we have to rely on the power of Yehuda to keep us from disappearing and assimilating completely into the world. Disappearing. Yosef, you, this is your job. And as soon as Yosef says yes, Yaakov says, swear by God. And he says, Simno yodcho tachas yirechi, put your hand underneath my thigh, take hold of my circumcision, which is my mitzvah, which is my holiness, which is your holiness, Yosef. And swear to me by God that you will not leave me. That if I am to be buried, take me up into where my fathers are buried, where my mother's buried, and bury me there. Kvartani bikvurasam. So, why does he have to say to Yosef, Imna matzasi chein? You know, because sometimes you have a mitzvah, and you do the mitzvah because you're commanded to do the mitzvah. But it's very hard. Very hard. It's so tedious. And then sometimes a mitzvah has chein, and you experience something of the reason. What does it mean to experience something of the reason? To experience something of the taste. If you are connected to a mitzvah where you can taste it, then it has chein by you, and then it's not a tedium. It's not a yoke. Can be the most energy taking mitzvah, like Pesach, making Pesach. For some people, everything to do with Pesach is such a joy, it doesn't matter. Cleaning, scraping, scrubbing, putting shelving paper, there's like nocha there, the shelving paper, and then a cover on it, and then putting in this is my mitzvah. This is my Pesach. So, where does it come from? Because there's got chein. It's interesting, the Zohar Kodesh this week, he gives a mushal, it's a very funny mushal. He says, a man lives on a mountain, and what does he eat? He eats wheat. He grows wheat, and he eats wheat. One day, he comes to the city, and he's there, and he is looking around, and people say, you're hungry? He says, yeah, I'm hungry. So they put a loaf of bread in front of him. He said, what's this? And they say, it's bread. You eat it. So he eats it. He said, wow, it's delicious. What's it made from? It's made from wheat. Woo, yeah, made from wheat. Wow, I never tasted anything like this before. Anyway, so then they stick in front of him grits that are roasted with oil and stuff, and he eats it. He says, what's this? They say, it's wheat. Marvelous. And then they put in front of him some kind of confection made with honey and flour and oil and all kinds of stuff. And he says, "Shh, what is this?" He says, "It's made from wheat." "Oh." He says, "You know, I gotta tell you something." He says, "I'm the master of all this because I eat nothing else but wheat." And the Zohar Kodesh says, "Yeah? What are you gonna say to somebody like that? He has the klal, he doesn't have the prat. He has the rules, he doesn't have the details. He knows exactly what needs to be done. You need to eat wheat. He doesn't know any of the pratim, right? He doesn't have a taste. What taste does he have? You know, he takes wheat and he chews it, you know. Does he have a clue?" So the Zohar Kodesh says this is a mashal of somebody who lives by rules. Yosef is the rules. This who lives by rules. Him, no exceptions. So Yaakov Avinu says to him, "You know something? I know you don't. You're not going to leave me here. I know you're not going to leave me here. But you're going to need more than rules. If you're going to schlep me out of Egypt, you're going to need more. So swear to me by God. Im no matzosi chein beinecho." He says, "And you're going to have to develop a taste. The rules aren't going to be good enough, and also your own strength's not going to be good enough. You need to be connected to God. After, with all the best intentions, you need to be connected." Yaakov Avinu, he doesn't bless Shimon. In fact, he doesn't bless Reuven. He curses Levi and Shimon's anger. It's only when he gets to Yehuda that something inside him wakes up and he realizes, you know, my children aren't all bad, you know. And Kibrei Chosam, like the blessing, he blessed them all, it says at the end. But we don't really find a blessing for Reuven and Shimon and Levi. Moshe, before he dies, he says, "Yechi Reuven, Reuven should live." Levi gives a long bracha to Mecho v'Orecho. Shimon, he doesn't bless. Shimon, he leaves. And he includes Shimon in the bracha of Yehuda. He says, "Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda." Let God hear the voice of Yehuda. And that is a mirror of Leah, who says, "Ki Shema Hashem Ki Sno Anoichi Shema." God heard that I am the hated one. And so she calls him Shimon. So Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda, Yehuda includes Shimon. And in fact, in the land grants, when everybody came into the land of Canaan, became Eretz Yisrael, and everybody had their region, Shimon didn't have a region. His land was inside the territory of that everybody knew was called Yehuda. He didn't have a separate territory like all the other 12 tribes. So the failure to fix Shimon in the Torah, I mean, not Yaakov and not Moshe, you know, Yaakov and Moshe are two aspects of the divine. You know, Moshe is the inside and Yaakov is the outside. They can't fix Shimon. And when Yaakov says to Yosef, "Al nosit bereini b'mitzrayim," you know, Yosef is the tikkun of Midas Yisod, right? Yosef is the one who is so controlled in his sexuality, right? And Mitzrayim is called Ervas Haaretz, right, the nakedness of the land. Because in Mitzrayim, nobody ever occurred to anybody to hold back anything. Shimon is very special. We learned in Ishbitz many times that each of the 12 tribes has their moment when they are the leaders of the Jewish people. And the holiest of the holy is Shimon. The holiest of all the tribes is Shimon. Shimon, we're learning in Sefer Yetzirah, he's the month of Av, and he's the letter Tes. You know, the letter Tes is like a heart. It's actually shaped like the letter 9, right? Upside down 9. But the letter Tes is not just a heart. The way the top of the letter Tes comes in and folds in on the inside, it's like the heart of the heart. And Yehuda is the heart of the Jewish people, but the heart of the heart of the Jewish people is the Shimon. So the fixing of Shimon, When Shimon is fixed, then the exile ends. So Yaakov couldn't see the fixing, and even Moshe couldn't see the fixing of Shimon. And Shimon is the holiest. Shimon is the ears of the divine. You know, in the whole of Shir HaShirim, you know, every part of the divine body is discussed, right? From the top of the head to the soles of the feet, the waist and the thighs and the inside and the outside and the cheeks, the belly button, everything is, but not the ears. There's no ears mentioned in the Song of Songs, because the ears refers to Shimon. It's a secret. So the how can we even begin to talk about what's happening here in the exile? So that's why this week's Sedra begins without a breathing space, because we're entering into something that, if you had the vision to be able to understand what's happening to you, it wouldn't be a secret. Like sometimes, you know, if only I had the moment of insight into what's happening to me, then whatever's happening to me wouldn't seem like such a trial. You know, the great Houdini, he was killed by one of his fans by mistake. You know, the great Houdini, his body was in great shape, right? So he had like a six-pack of muscles on his abdomen, you know. And he would let people punch his stomach, you know. And it was like punching a washboard, you know. It's like hard as rock. And once one of his fans came and said, "Mr. Houdini, could I have the honor of punching in your stomach?" And he says, "Sure." And the guy punched him before he had prepared himself. And that's what he died from. All he needed was just a moment to like, you know, collect himself and be in charge of the muscles of his stomach and, you know, whatever he needed to do to harden them. But the guy didn't know that, you know. He said, yeah, he punched him. It ruptured whatever it was. Because he didn't have that moment between Vayifru, Vayirbu, Ma'od, and Vayichi Yaakov. There just wasn't that moment, but nevertheless, Vayichi Yaakov is the highest, highest life. It's so high that later when it says Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lomas, it talks about the death of Yaakov. He calls him Yisrael, because Yaakov here in this Sedra is already in the other world. He's in Egypt, he's in the other world. How can he be in Egypt and both be in the other world as well? You know, we talk about Avraham as being Chesed and Yitzchak being Gevurah and Yaakov is being Tiferes. And very often we, you know, we think we know what it means. What does it mean that Avraham is Chesed? It means that Avraham, he was a very loving person, but he was mevare. He made his love was so transparent that he never in his life did he love anything but God. And all the loves that he had, his wife, his children, everything, he was ready to show, and it became transparent that who he really loves is God. Right? You know the story of and the Reb Lev Yitzchak of Berditchev, I think he was in Liadi for Shabbos or something, and the Alter Rebbe asked him please not to make a scene at the Shabbos table, you know, because the Reb Lev Yitzchak of Berditchev would tend to get carried away, you know. So his host said to him, please, you know, like, it's not Berditchev here, and people don't quite, not familiar with your ways. And he says, sure. So he's sitting there quietly at the table when somebody offered him some soup. They said, do you like soup? He said, do I like soup? I like God. He said, I like God. I love God. And within a few seconds, he was like, you know, his body was like in convulsions and there was soup all over the floor. And do I love? Who do I love? Soup? I don't love soup. I love God. So, the story is that this tablecloth was never washed afterwards, and people would be like, these were the holy stains of Reb Levi Yitzchak, the love stains of Reb Levi Yitzchak. Avraham Avinu, he went through his life, every time he felt love, he would turn it or make it transparent to love of God, you know. So if Avraham did chesed with you, in a sense it wasn't about you, right? If he did chesed with people, it wasn't about people, it was about God. So everything that Avraham, he was mevarer, he clarified love. So when something came to Avraham that he needed to love, he had to be very careful, because this was his avoider. This is his whole work in life, was to make sure that his love was not love of himself. It wasn't love, you know, like, oh, I love the taste of Toblerone. That he loved God. So when came things to love, he had to be very careful. Came things to hate, he didn't have to be very careful. It came things to, in other words, when it came time to say no, Avraham didn't have to be very careful. He could say no with a open mind, and he could just say no to things. You want to do me a favor? No, thank you. Right? I don't want you to be able to say you made Avraham rich. No. Avraham could say no without a second thought, but to say yes, he had to first think. And this is because Avraham had a midah. He had the midah of chesed. The midah means a measurement, you know. So Avraham is working within the parameters of chesed, and he has to all his life be careful not to love something that isn't God. Yitzchak is the midah of gevura. It's the measure of gevura. So Yitzchak has to be very careful when he's receiving. And in fact, Yitzchak makes sure never to receive anything. Everything he gives back. So Yitzchak is a vayizra. Yitzchak is always sowing, you know. Like, he receives something, he plants it. What's this vayizra Yitzchak? Yitzchak is always sowing things, you know. Because if I give you seed, so you grind it up into flour and you make bread with it, right? But Yitzchak's not like that. No. I'm afraid to receive anything. So if he receives anything, he immediately plants it. And of course, what happens? It grows into 5 seeds. Every seed becomes 5, 10, 15. So Yitzhak acquires more and more and more, because everything he receives, he immediately gives back. But to say yes, and Yitzhak doesn't have to think twice. Just like for Avraham saying no, he doesn't have to think twice. Yitzhak doesn't have to think twice about saying yes. And so, you know, Yitzhak experiences pleasure. Yitzhak loves his wife Rivka. Yitzhak kisses Yaakov and gives him over the secret of kissing. It comes to saying yes. Yitzhak doesn't have to worry, because his middah, his measure, where he in the parameters, it's about saying no. It's about gevurah, withholding. When he withholds, he has to be very careful. He has to be very careful. When he says no, he has to be very careful. In case, you know, Yitzhak, his middah is pachad, is fear, right? Which is that Yitzhak, just as Avraham, his life's work is to in himself not to love anything that isn't loving God. Yitzhak is not to be afraid of anything that isn't being afraid of God. If Yitzhak has fear, it's fear of God. Not fear of anything, not fear of consequences, not fear of people. Yaakov doesn't have a middah. Yaakov is not a middah. Yaakov is not a parameter. He doesn't have parameters. And that's why the Gemara says that God will give you, it says, in Toshim Mesheves Raglecho, if on Shabbos, you know, you don't work, and the karosa le Shabbos oinik, and you call Shabbos, make Shabbos a pleasure, so then v'chalticha nachlas Yaakov avicha, I will give you the inheritance of Yaakov. So the Gemara says, what's special about the inheritance of Yaakov? It's nachla b'li mitzurim, you know, because to Avraham God says, I will give you everything that you can see, I will give you. All this land that you can see, I will give you. To Yitzhak, he says, L'chol zarecha et neno es ha'arotzai so'el. I will give these lands to you and to your children. To Yaakov, it says, Ufaratzta yom avakema. You will burst out left and right, east and west, north and south. You will just explode. So Yaakov has nachla b'li mitzurim, because he doesn't have a middah. What does Yaakov have? He has every moment, doesn't matter if it's love or fear, Yaakov always looks to God. What is I'm supposed to do next? So Yaakov doesn't have the place that Avraham and Yitzhak have, where they don't have to worry about something. Right? Avraham doesn't have to worry about fear, it's whatever happens. Yitzhak doesn't have to worry about love, it's always good. Yaakov, and even though he thinks about himself that's makes him less than his parents, less than Avraham and Yitzhak. Elikim roi oisim oidi, he says, you know, my parents, my ancestors, they walked before God. I mean, they were given their roles, and they knew what to do. Me, elikim roi oisim oidi, me God, who is my shepherd since forever. You know, because Yaakov never felt that he could live by any kind of a rule. There were no rules for Yaakov. Always he's living inside God. And that's why Avraham calls God's place a mountain. Shebahar Hashem Yeroi. A mountain means to be up above. Yeah, Avraham was up above. In a sense, he was distanced from the pleasures of this world, because before he enjoyed the pleasure of this world, he had to be Mavari. What is it about this that I love? So for him, the place of God is this mountain that you have to be looking down on your own world all the time. Yitzhak sees, Vayetze Yitzhak L'Suach Basoda, he goes out into the field, because for Yitzhak there's no nothing. For him, there's no him. He's his batlos. He's, for him, he's just a seed that God has planted in the world. That's how he sees himself. And that's why he's, for him, his whole avoid is planting more seeds. Because Yitzhak experiences himself as this divine seed in the world. Because he looks inside himself and everything that he looks at is divine. And there's no room for him. There's just this pacha, this trembling terror in the presence of God. And so he just keeps giving it back. But for Yaakov, he says, Kim ze beis Elokim. This is the house of God. He sees himself inside. Wherever he looks, he sees God. And what do I do next? Well, God will tell me what to do next. And Yaakov Avinu never did anything in his life that needed to be clarified afterwards. Because everything that he did it in this awareness of God. And that's why Vayichi Yaakov lives in Eretz Mitzrayim. It's the Yaakov who lives in Eretz Mitzrayim. It's this ability to do the right thing, even when he's asleep. He falls asleep, v'hinei l'kim nitzav olav. God is standing over him, but doesn't say oimed, doesn't say standing is amida, but nitzav, which suggests that God is always standing over Yaakov, even in his sleep. And that's us. God is always standing over us, even in our sleep. And we are in gulus, we are in exile, and we're deeply asleep. The Mishnah says there's three things that make a Yid a Yid. A Yid is three characteristics of the Yidin is Rachmonim, Baishonim, Goyim Lechesed. And usually we translate this as Rachmonim, they have Rachmonis, compassion. Baishonim, they have shame. And Goyim Lechesed, we do Gemilas Chasodim, we do loving kindness. The Ishbitz explains that, you know, from Avraham Avinu, we get the ability to be goimel chesed, to be really truly lovingly kind. And to be truly lovingly kind means that you have a love of God inside you. If you have a love of God inside you, and you really, really have a love of God inside you, it means that you see God in everybody. And so your love for God just spills over to people. And that's something, that a gift that was given to the Jewish people, that we always have for all eternity, even when we're asleep, is that we can feel ourselves part of the world. And because we feel God is the world, and so there is no me and you, it's us. And just as I feel about my body, you know, I wouldn't punish part of my body because it hurts me, you know. It's like, I'll take care of it. If my toe is hurting me, I don't hit it with a hammer or cut it off or do something because it's hurting me. I don't think of my toe as being something other. So if somebody else is hurting me, I need to stop thinking of them as the other and start thinking of, you know, taking care of it. And that's Goyim Lechesed, and that we get from Avraham, because Avraham, he sees his love of God is so great that he sees God everywhere. And so he sees in everybody. Yitzchak is truly afraid of God because he sees himself. There's hardly any room for Yitzchak inside Yitzchak. And so when the Torah says fear of God and calls this busha, calls this shame, what it means is Yitzchak Avinu is, imagine you get caught doing something criminal or, you know, something disgusting, you know, about, it would be terrible. So for Yitzchak, there's no fear of consequences or anything. It's like he's mamish in the presence of the divine, in the presence of God all the time. And so the thought of you know, even the thought of doing something disgusting is shaming. And so, Leman Tia Yirosoi Alpenechem, The Gemara says that when Moshe says, you know, I bless you, that God says that the fear of God should be on your face. What does it mean on your face? The Gemara says, Zuhabush, this is a shame. So what it means is that, you know, when we talk about fear of God and shame, it means just that we're so much in the awareness that even the thought of turning away from God for a moment to do something bad is enough to make ourselves feel ashamed of what we're thinking. That's the meaning of Baishonim, that Yidden are shameful, that we have inside us somewhere an awareness all the time of being in the presence of the divine, and we're ashamed to turn away. Rachamonim doesn't mean the compassionate. The Ishbitzi says it means that we have the concept of the womb. You know, a woman has a baby in her womb, but the baby could have different blood type than the mother. How is that possible? Because the rechem, the Hebrew word for rechem, for womb, creates a space for the other. And so rachamonim means choice, awareness that I have choice. So when we talk about compassion, it doesn't always mean being kind. You know, if I were a doctor and I were brought in to treat Adolf Hitler, you know, it doesn't matter about my Hippocratic oath, it doesn't matter how much pain he's in, my real compassion would be to put him to death immediately. So compassion means choice. It doesn't mean just doing what feels good. That's not what compassion means. Rechem, it means that there's a place for the other. There's a place for the choice. So sometimes the compassionate thing is to be discompassionate. So when the Torah, when the Mishnah says that these three things that we have, Baishonim, Rachmonim, Goyim Lechesed, that Rachmonim doesn't just mean, you know, a blanket merciful, right? But it means having a choice. And this Yaakov has a choice because he's not working with midos. He's not working with measures. He's not trapped in some kind of a archetypal, you know, characteristic. And because Yaakov is together with us in Egypt as Vayechi Yaakov, we just have to remember, you know, Yaakov's plea, Al nosik bereini b'mitzrayim, please don't bury me in Egypt. And what that means is, you know, for everybody, we have to just try and hang on to our awareness all the time and be aware of who we are and to be awake. And when we feel that we're falling asleep, to find inside us the Yehuda who, you know, even after we've fallen asleep is still awake. And when Yehuda needs waking up, then there's a Shimon inside us. Thank you.